the next briefing culminates a long journey.
Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I think you have to read this about the notice and the...
I already did that.
Oh, did you read it?
Yeah, I missed it. I'm sorry.
You missed it, too? Carry on.
The next briefing culminates a long journey. It's been emotional. It's even time. It's been confrontational. But now it's kind of time to rise above all that. It's time to move forward with the purpose of trying to understand and to share everybody's views, both those who are for a particular proposal and those who are against it. What you're about to see is something that has never been done before, but it should have been done a long time ago, and you've never seen it at the detail that you're going to see it here today. We've needed it for years because you, the board, will be in conflict with developers, with cities, possibly environmentalists, and with those folks who live around the two lakes of Possum Kingdom and Granbury. And the answer is, why? Why are we in conflict with anybody? The answer is that money is going to drive the people to pressure you. And while equality may be our goal, I can guarantee you it's not the goal of the special interest group. The vote loading capacity study is a first, and we believe that it needs to be done, and it has been done, and we're going to ask you to approve it as a benchmark for us to go forward. In your notebooks, you notice that you have a resolution. We're not going to ask for a resolution today. This will just be a report, and then that will be as a result of the workshop and as we bring all the three pieces together. And so that was our anticipation of not knowing where we were going to be at this point in time. So there will be no resolution today for the boat loading capacity study. Some have argued about the validity of the data that is from within the study. And some will most likely argue that the results are all messed up. But I guess it depends on one's perspective as to how, which where you sit, where you stand. And the fact is that we are here today. We've heard from the stakeholders. It's in the briefing we're fixing to see. And we're here to fix it. And we'll hear from the experts. And what we need is everybody to help do what's right. I guarantee you we're already getting pressure down at Granbury about the development. If you look at the data, it's very obvious, not what I would say that, but just other data, called environmental data, says that we have some problems down there, and this board's going to have to deal with them. We believe that this report, particularly this one, is the bedrock to go forward in the development of these two lakes from an environmental perspective, from an economic perspective, and from the perspective that you as the board share about your stewardship. So the process again is what you go through today, we'll do it tomorrow, we have our meetings, we discuss, we do all those things, then we come up with a thing that will be put forward and to say, this, from the board's perspective, staff, this is what we want you to go forth and follow. And that's the name of the game. Okay? We're ready for the buzz on the set.
All right. We've got to do public comments.
Okay.
At this time, we've set aside time to hear from you, the general public. Those of you that are interested in providing comments here should fill out one of the cards provided at the table outside the door to the boardroom with your name and contact information on it. We encourage you to speak your mind and tell us your thoughts. Be mindful, however, that while you can say anything you wish, the committee cannot deliberate or discuss issues which are not posted on the meeting notice. That is not our requirement. It is state law. The committee is limited in its ability to participate in discussions or deliberations by the provision of the Open Meeting Act. The Open Meetings Act authorizes a government body to give members of the public an opportunity to speak at a public meeting and provide comments. However, the committee may not deliberate or act on any matters which have not been specifically posted for that agenda. Do we have any cards for comment? Seeing none at this time, move into the report on the vote voting study.
It's over, huh?
I've got a cup of coffee. Chairman,
if I could just add one other thing for the board and the committee specifically. As John gives his briefings, I think it's very key as you walk through it, you see the color-coded matrices that he has that are really management objectives within the classifications that he's got, and that you understand what he's saying there, because in those objectives and classifications, that's kind of going to be our charge from you if you agree with what you see up there and how we manage the lake specifically this way for on-water type facilities and that. And we've got stakeholder recommendations that he's going to bring forward as well at both lakes that we'll be happy to discuss afterwards or during the briefing as well, Mike, John, and I. So I just wanted to mention that anyway as you watch this brief. I'd like to introduce John Petrie. Many of you met John and saw John in January when he gave an interim update on the voting capacity study. And he'll brief you now his final report at this point in time anyway, where he is with that study. John, come on.
Hello, this is a little bit. The other two speakers are taller than me, so that's about my height for speaking. Before I begin, I want to say that I can empathize with you in your role. I live in Windsor, Colorado, and I served on the Planning Commission. And when I moved to Windsor 6 years ago, it had about 5,000 people. Now it has 15,000 in 6 years. So we've dealt with some contentious development issues, and I can understand where you're coming from. My role today, however, is to present information as a scientist. Okay. Throughout this process, the public has been involved. The survey results involve them in a systematic way. They have also been involved in many public workshops. We actually retooled the process to be more inclusive and receive input from them in a second workshop. I taught at Colorado State University as a professor for 4 years. And when I worked with my students, I told them that any decision is a tug of war between politics, science, and management. And what kind of gobbles up that decision space depends on how much weight you put on each of those factors. So I present to you information from a scientific standpoint. It's based on sound science, the best available science. We've worked with management to incorporate their wisdom in terms of the objectives, and we've been inclusive with the public in a series of workshops. The other component to this is the political aspect that you weigh in on based on your experience and other factors. Okay, let's just start with the first slide. Okay, what I'm also going to do, since much of this material I've shared with you before, I'm going to go quickly through the methods part. I want to learn a little bit more on the maps and what they show. I will show you some actual findings since the report is complete. I believe you have executive summaries in front of you. And then I'll conclude with the recommendations that are a product of this collective effort. Now, I want to mention collective. It has fingerprints on it from the public, from management, and from my perspective as a consultant. So I'll go over the purpose of presentation, the need, my qualifications, why do we manage lakes, the methods, the classification, and finally the recommendations. In terms of the study need, I think we've seen this before. TVA did a master plan and called for a need to address voting capacity. Next slide. In terms of my qualifications, I've done over 30 voting capacity studies around the country. I actually received a master's in Texas A&M. I worked for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers 15 years, traveling all over the U.S. doing this kind of work. I give talks at national voting safety conferences. I'm considered a national expert in this topic area. Go ahead. Why do we manage lakes? Well, you know, we want to promote enjoyable experiences. It's about safety and enjoyment. and it shouldn't base the word on sound professional judgment. So by assembling the best science, as I'm trying to say, and fostering a dialogue, as we have done, we can work at a resolution between the public and managers. I've used a five-step process effectively to do this. First, I convene with cooperating partners to decide what the issues are. Second, we do a study, as I'll report on today. Third, we reconvene those cooperating partners and come up with proposed actions based on what we learn from the data. Third, we do a public workshop, and in this case, we actually did two of them for both lakes. Fourth. And the fifth and final phase is to come up with final recommendations that you'll see at the end of this. You're welcome to interrupt me at any point if something isn't clear. I want to be as straightforward as possible with this. There are really no smoke and mirrors here. My job is to make this understood by each of you. Okay, in terms of methods, I mentioned before we pre-test the survey. We do a random sample, and we also do involve vote counts. The random sample allows us to gather data on all the weekend days and two weekdays during the summer. We collected data from Memorial Day through August 15th. Okay, let's look at some of the findings. I'm just going to compare both lakes. In terms of what we did, we completed over 1,000 surveys. Okay, Granbury, we did 123 RAMP, Pasadena 144. We did those as face-to-face interviews. Then we mailed this survey to both dock owners and marina slip owners. And you can see the totals were fairly comparable. And the nice thing to note is that the response rate here was 42% for Lake Granbury and 52% for Pasadena. That's actually quite good. You want to be close to 50 in order to be scientifically valid. Go ahead, please. And let's look at some other findings here. People voting a little less apparently on Lake Granbury, 10 years compared to 16 years. And I've seen this second statistic very often, return voters. It's very common for voters to be in the 80% range of returning to the lake. So you have a clientele that comes back a lot. Time on the lake is quite comparable, 4.2 to 5.5 hours. Many voters tend to dominate, and it's interesting that they only vary by one percentage point. So we get a lot of them. Although when we do interview, we try and interview a mix of gender, both male and female. In terms of the boat length, you see here that a little larger boat at Pasadena and a bigger horsepower. Go ahead, please. In terms of the watercraft that are there, we can see at Lake Granbury, runabouts were dominated, followed by fishing boats. Personal watercraft was as high as 17%, which is actually quite high. Go ahead, please. For Pasadena, in terms of watercraft, we see similar percentages of runabouts being 54%. Personal watercraft were as high as 20%, 23%. Pontoon boats appeared but did not appear as often on Lake Granbury. And, of course, fishing boats, 15%. Go ahead, please. Where did it come from for Pasadena Lake? You can see here Fort Worth, Weatherford, Wichita Falls, and Mineral Wells. And that's what we expect. One thing we try and look at with data is, does it make sense? Does it pass the kind of gut test? Is this what we see or think happening? If you've done a good job of random sampling and it's a systematic sample, it should be representative of what's really out there. Okay? And so the reason I like to share this data is that talking to managers and their feel for things, it sort of fits what they think is happening. If you do see anomalies, then you should provide some explanation. In terms of the boat origin for Lake Granbury, it was about 30% came from Granbury, and then the other percentage was very small from other towns that they came from, so I didn't report those. Okay? Go ahead. Okay, the big question then is crowding. I mean, we really want to find out what kind of crowding and conflict was going on there. At Possum Kingdom, 60% said it was not crowded. However, 40% said it was slightly to extremely crowded. Okay? And for Granbury, it was 70% not crowded and 40%. Okay? And that's quite typical of other studies. So if you think about 30-40% of the customer base saying they're uncomfortable with conditions because they're experiencing crowding and conflict, that raises a concern for a caution, okay? At public meetings, they said to us, well, if 70% of your customers are happy, that's good enough, okay? That's a judgment call on your part. Working with managers around the country, we would tend to think that that raises some alarm if we have 30 to 40% of the customers indicating that they're encountering conflicts and crowding on the lake. Okay, so I think that in a way, both lakes are at kind of a threshold of experiencing this kind of crowding, and it needs attention. Go ahead, please. Okay, then I want to provide some verbatim comments. We originally had personal watercraft as an issue. We took it off the table because the solutions are really more related to state regulations. But at the same time, we can't ignore the fact that PWCs are causing a discomfort for some. And at the same time, the findings were about 80% in favor of having no restrictions on personal watercraft and 20% saying we have a problem. So I wanted to read some verbatim comments here. And you can read along with me. You know, if you don't put restrictions on watercraft, you need to do for all personal watercraft. So this is very representative of what people are saying. Don't discriminate against us. And then the flip side of that, please, the next slide. In terms of against personal watercraft, they did mention the reckless operation of PWCs. They observed this, and they would be glad to support enforcement for BRA strategies to address it, okay? So there's two sides of that. Again, about 20% of comments were like this, and 80% were, you know, don't pick on us. Okay. I also want to share with you some information related to marina development that is in question in Nailey Slough. And I'm going to share with you again the for and against information. On the for side, again, it was about 80% in favor and 20% against in terms of what people sent in. I firmly support new marina. It would help alleviate some of the overcrowding congestion. This marina, as described, should be an asset to property owners. And mainly, I heard from property owners in those responses. Okay. Now, I want to, before you turn the slide over, I'll read you a few more verbatim comments, if I could, please.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
This comment that's on the screen.
Yes, sir.
This is what you support?
No. This is a verbatim comment from the public. I'm just sharing the data, okay? I'm really not going to talk about any recommendations till the end. Go ahead, question, thought.
So was this a question in your survey or just a comment from somebody?
What we did, here's what, during both workshops we provided cards for people to comment on. They provided cards during a period of time that we allowed both through those workshops and on the internet site. I took those comments and I have them right here. Here's an actual copy of what someone wrote, that's why I brought them with me, and I'm simply recording them verbatim.
Okay.
I want to share with you both the pro and the con side and the kind of arguments that they're offering. I thought it would be useful to do. Okay? So what I like to do is just read. I just picked three of them that seem to be fairly representative of what I found in the data. In the appendices, you can find all those comments verbatim. I don't change them or anything. I just put them in categories. Okay? Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
And yours? Okay. Okay, we own property at Passing Human in Gainesville, and we have been on waiting list for 2 years for boat slips. We would very much like to see marine at Gainesville. As it is too hard to keep a sailboat at the dock. Please approve this marina so I can bring my boat from Lake Texoma. I own property at Gaines Bend and Crossing Kingdom. I support new marina at the mouth of Navy Slough in Gaines Bend. I am a boat owner. I'm a property owner at Gaines Bend. I have been since 1981. I have lot 110. We have a floating dock. The cost of having the dock to store my boat is very expensive. The plan for me at Gaines Bend makes a lot of sense. And something that would be pleasing to me, I encourage you to allow this marina.
There's also another comment that Peggy Gibson wrote a letter, and we put it in your folder on the side there, too.
Now, I'd like to share with you just the same number of comments, three of them against. If you don't have with the next slide, please. Okay. And then this one here. Says, I did not want to learn that the South Indian Sewer Lake is especially too crowded there. We already have two full service marinas in the lake, and that's enough. Please do not approve this marina. And I'll just share with you a few more. I'm a homeowner at Gainesville. I hope you do not approve marina. It is very dangerous there, especially on holidays, and the marina would worsen a dangerous situation by adding more boats. We have plenty of marinas with more than adequate facilities on PK. I have been a property owner for 15 years, and it is my opinion it's way too crowded, especially from the DM to past the ranch. Myself and all my neighbors opposing the marina or boat docks, please, enough is enough. And finally, the lake especially at Neely Slough is too crowded. We already have a marina there, and we would not support an approval. Okay? So you can read these verbatim. I just want to share with you the kind of feel for them and what they're saying. You can look at them at your leisure. But those comments are provided.
Okay, the last three that you read,
yes,
where do those individuals live?
Okay, if you notice, some lived actually there at Gaines Bend, and one did not. Okay.
So you actually had people living in Gaines Bend that said, we do not want them.
Exactly. And that surprised me. That's a very good question you're asking. That really surprised me. And I can read more. There are more like that, too. Actually, most of them did live there. There was just a few that didn't, but I wanted to be fair and share a one that did not. So these aren't people who are coming from the outside and saying, hey, I don't want it there. These are actually people who live there and say that facilities are adequate and it's already too crowded. Okay? So it's a balance there between which way to go. But clearly there's evidence on both sides. That's my point. Okay, let's go on with the methods. So what we do is we ask people what are your favorite places, what places you avoid, and what places you find unsafe, and put that on a map. Go ahead. I've developed these criteria over the past 20 years to deal with density, so we can talk about density in terms of high to low. And I've also dealt with conflict, so that we can ascribe conflict to certain areas and marry these two pieces of information up to create a classification system. Okay? Now, I want to mention what we did, though, in terms of the analysis. This is a bit of a contentious point, too, and I want you to kind of dial in on this one with me, if you will. When we're presenting two maps, map A here does not include the influence of July 3rd. Okay? So we allocated a rate for weekdays at 33% and weekends 66%. And July 3rd had zero influence. However, based on some information I'll share with you in a minute, the 2005 Possum Kingdom was a low news year for a number of reasons, and I'll share with you that. We felt that the July 3rd data provided valuable information, and we wanted to add it to the contribution for the classification map. Now, we didn't try to overemphasize its influence, so we have an influence of 25% for July 3rd data. That would mean we had to lower the influence of the weekdays and weekends for the map B scenario. Okay? And I feel that's defensible. I feel that, you know, we've gone over this quite a bit. I've had other colleagues of mine look at this information, and I feel I can stand on this. What you're going to see is a recommended map for Granbury that would only include map A scenario, because we did not have any evidence to show that it was a low-use year for that part of Texas, for Granbury. I think it was. But unless I have compelling information to say it was, I can't support using a July 3rd data there. Are you with me? However, for Possum Kingdom, we do have data from two independent sources to say 2005 was a low-use year. Therefore, I felt the influence of July 3rd data would add to our understanding of what's really happening there. So my recommended map for Granbury is A, and it's B for Possum Kingdom. Okay?
I'm just curious. What sources indicated that it was low use?
I'll show those. I have charts to show those. I'll show those. I actually have the information. I just wanted to kind of roll it out now so you know what's coming. I'll show you those exact charts. I actually did last time, too. But we may. That's one reason I'm presenting some of this again. I wanted to have all this here is for your decision record so that you have full information to make the right choices. Okay, so I will show that with you. Okay, go ahead, please. Go ahead. So that allows us then to, in terms of the use level data, that's the density data, how many boats are there on the water, and what kind of conflicts are happening out there in the categories of high, moderate, low, we can make classifications for the lake with these four simple colors. Okay, red, green, yellow, and orange. Okay? Next slide, please. So this allows us to write, as I believe Kent, you have mentioned, specific management objectives for each zone. Okay? Now, let's just kind of go through this. The red ones, we have high density, high conflict. We would probably not want to encourage more development there. It would probably take more patrols and more law enforcement to contain that kind of situation. So let's go to the bottom one, the yellow, class 4. Here we have low density road traffic. Again, we wouldn't want to exacerbate conditions there and make that worse. Those are small coves that someone might want to take their child fishing. We would want to keep development out of there. Why? Because quality, as someone mentioned before, we define it as being synonymous with providing a range of choice for people. If people have choices, they may want to go to an area that's heavily crowded, for example, Hell's Gate, or they may want to go to the Cove and experience a low-density experience, more primitive or more pristine, and that choice should be available to them. So in order to preserve choice, my recommendations are not to develop in areas classified as 4 that don't have a lot of use, nor do they have much conflict. Now, let's look at class 3. This is kind of an unusual one. Here we have high density but low conflict. It would seem that people would be in trouble there, but they're actually getting along. These are locations, for example, in places we call escape codes, where people may stop their boat, jump out, and swim. The densities may be higher, but if we go and talk to them, they say, well, I'm getting along, it's fine. Okay? That's why you simply can't use a boat per acre figure as a calculation, because you need to know what kind of behavior is happening in those spots. And finally, class 3 I made green because it essentially means green for development. Here, the conflicts are moderate and the density is moderate. It's sort of a gray area, okay? So in these kind of locations, we can accommodate growth and development. When I did the study for Lake Travis, it came to be about 27%. And I remember working with the general manager there. He was happy to say, okay, folks, here's 27% of lake that we're allowing development. So it takes a lake that has a lot of diversity and breaks it up into something that is understandable based on this pyramid of data that I've been putting together here. And you can trace, you know, this classification all the way back to how we gather the data, and there's a thread that hangs through it that I believe provides a good evidentiary record that the data are supportable. Next slide, please. So here's what it looks like in terms of favor and avoid. You can see here, let's just kind of look at an example here. Here's the green, those are favored. Apparently, this is a very favored spot here. Let's look at unsafe. We have that red. Looks like we're getting some, you know, unsafe conditions in that spot, a few other locations where we see red, okay? So this is what people are telling us when we hand them a map and ask them to tell us what places you avoid, find unsafe, or your favorite. When I did this study for Table Rock Road, if any of you've been to Grants, Missouri, at the time Colonel Ruff was deciding whether to approve or disapprove the seaplane. And it was in a location like this where the seaplane would, you know, take off field, land, take people back. And he said that it was quite congested. In addition, it was a favorite place, and he used that justification to deny the future use of that seaplane. And so I think Max worked good as far as, you know, helping us make these kinds of decisions. Go ahead, please. I also wanted to add with this, for possible human life, the information on accidents. And you can see here, we've got quite a few accidents here. This was over the past 5 years. And the accident is defined as having at least $500 worth of damage to a vehicle or someone who was hospitalized. Okay. So here's the accident data, and the rangers continue to collect that every year, and it's really good as an independent source of information to examine. Okay, so in terms of what we did then for this study was to take the two scenarios that I mentioned, as based on condition, map A and map B. And we, last time we provided those maps, and I've gone through and explained already why we did the difference. And the bottom line here is that, you know, for Possum Kingman, we thought there was a need to include July 3rd as a recommended map. However, similar evidence was not found for Granbury. And I'd like to go into that evidence now, please. Go ahead. Next slide. Okay. What we've done in addition to that, and I'll share with you those slides, is provide projections. We want to know, hey, what would this lake be like in the next 5 or 10 years if use increases? So we held conflicts constant and simply added boats in increments of 20% up to 100%. Okay? And so we're going to share with you those slides. And so this produced 5 maps for each alternative, a total of 20 condition scenarios. We didn't distribute them today here, but I thought we could do it here on the slides. You can see just how it works. Okay. So let's just start with Possum Kingdom. All right? This one is map A scenario. It excludes the influence of July 3rd data. We'll go to the next. Now, this one here is the recommended map. This includes July 3rd data. And if you'll note, some areas came out red. That meant that these were fairly high density as we added the 25% influence of July 3rd. Are you with me? Okay. Okay, go ahead, please. And here's why. And this gets back to your question, sir, that I worried about before, but now I want to answer in detail. We did headcount data, or it was done, for the past 5 years. And you'll notice here for Possum Kingdom that 2005 was clearly a low-use year. It dropped quite a bit, actually probably more than 25%. Okay? And this is for weekend data. Go ahead, please. Now, if you take an average of those 5 years, the previous 4 years with fish, you can see we just clump those other ones together in those bar charts, and then we compare it against 2005, you see that drop, okay? Those years compared to these years, and the numbers are right there also. Go ahead, please. Now, if we look for weekdays, we see a similar kind of pattern happening. For some reason, this year was a kind of abnormal low-use year. But even when I clump them together, next slide, please. You see, when I clumped all those previous ones together and compared against the 2005, we still see 2005 as being lower. And there are the numbers to show it.
And where did you get those numbers?
Those are headcount data gathered actually by Mike Cox and his crew. He continues to gather those every year. Is that right, Mike? Okay. Okay, so and he feels those are good data. Do you want to elaborate on anything else on how those are gathered? Or do you have a question, sir, for specifically about that information?
No, I just was curious where it came from.
Okay. Next slide, please. Now, then I went, okay, that's one piece of data, but, validity has to do with independent sources. If you find another independent source of data and it says the same thing, that lends credence to a case for validity. Research should always, the science should address validity and reliability. Okay? So when we look at the state park data obtained from them, we see, again, a similar pattern, and it's patterns that we're trying to discern here. Go ahead, please. Okay, so that allows me to make the case to include July 3rd data because it adds information I believe is missing should we not do it. And that explanation is in my report in detail for you to read at your leisure. Okay, so now let's look at the 20% increases. Here we start with 20% increase. Again, you see some cropping up. This almost looks like the July 3rd map. Go ahead. And then we see 40%. Now, what you should start seeing here, as density increases, some of those areas going from one color to another and more red-type colors, which show high density, high conflict appearing. Go ahead, please. Here, you see that kind of condition popped up as soon as we hit 60. We see a lot of high boat density happening in this area here. As someone said from the dam through here, we have a lot of traffic. These areas have remained green in this increase. Go ahead, please. 80%, some more cropping up of red areas. Okay. And go ahead, 100%. Now, here at 100%, you can see here, the area in question, mainly still happens to be here. At 100%, that area will have quite a bit of high-density traffic in this whole area. The other parts of the lake here and up here remain open for potential development. Should that be a consideration?
Kind of a projection in here of an increase in accidents. You had pretty, looks like that your map back to 5 years.
Sure.
Well, is that a pretty average amount of accidents for that period of time? Or do you have any way to compare that to other lakes?
There was a couple questions there. First of all, if we overlay the accidents with this, we see the ton of fire in those red areas. Again, that's another independent source of information. A lot of accidents, however, are not reported. Those are reported ones that dealt, as I defined, in either an injury that resulted in hospitalization of $500 worth of some kind of damage. And the other question, that's pretty typical of what I see at other lakes. They tend to be spread out. They're not as many reported as probably occur, and they tend to confirm what we know about density. Now, some accidents happen at midnight, which is two boats out there and they hit each other, okay? But there's a greater probability of having an accident under high density conditions, okay? So when you marry up the data from the accidents with these kinds of maps, as your question asked, to 100%, we see them come together where there are red zones. Now, as they continue to collect that kind of accident data and more boats increase, I anticipate increases in accidents. Okay? Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so now we've gone the full gamma here on Possum Kingdom, which was 100%. Will it look like this in 5 years? I don't know. It could be worse. One of the interesting things in the data is that fishing was only 1.8%. Fishing is really down because of the fish kill. That is very low compared to any lake I've seen in America. I can't even believe it. You know, should that come back, it may result in scenarios that look like this. That's why the management staff asked me to project out. Now, this does not include conflicts nor accident information. This is holding them constant and only looking at increases in density. Okay? Go ahead, please. Okay, let's look at graduated. Again, this is just kind of looking at different things. There's green, a favorite. Here's some avoided locations over here in red, and it's kind of spread out throughout the place. Not much happening there. Kind of diffuse right here. Go ahead, please. And here's the accident report. Again, we see, you know, spots of congestion here, spots of accidents here that may coincide with congestion. And this is great data. I really applaud the DRA for continuing to gather this information. And I think Mike Hilton said this some time back. In talking about trends, this is just one shot, okay? And it's a snapshot of something. When you run it in a baseline, as Phil said, over time you need to continue to monitor things and see, okay, where is this lake going? We really don't know. Who would have guessed 10, 15 years ago where this lake would be today, okay? And so boating is big. Things are changing. Our demographics are changing. There are a number of things that are unknowns that we can't really put our finger on. So gathering data and tracking it, like we track the weather, provides a good monitoring tool, and I would encourage the staff to do that in the future. So you had a question back there.
Yeah, I have a little bit of trouble seeing exactly where all the accidents are occurring, and I just wanted to ask one question from the rangers. How does that correlate with stumps? Is it one of the stumpy areas where the accidents occur?
Some of them are, some of them are not. I don't have the figures with me. Some of those accidents are at the mobile pick up.
Yeah, the local feeling is that the high majority of the accidents are in stump areas.
Very much it is that.
The area that's seen in the center, basically right in there, right almost downtown, there's not a lot of stumps in that area. There is the water's edge. You'll see a couple of...
You're talking about that area between the two bridges?
No, just south of the 377 bypass bridge. It's water's edge.
Yeah.
Right across from the marina.
Yeah.
There are some, and there was a couple of them. You'll see in there, there's like... You're in that area. Most of what you're seeing there were not stump related.
Were not stump related, okay.
That's a good point. So they're building related.
Okay. If I could just add one thing on the stumps, what typically happens when you hit a stump is you take a crop. And if you've got a stainless steel crop, you probably lost your lower end, your lower unit. You're typically not necessarily going to report that kind of activity in the lake later. You're going to haul your boat off the lake and you're going to fix your lower unit and replace your crop.
Okay. Question. Similar, but it was on Possum Kingdom in the Hog Bend area, and there was a bunch of accidents reported out there. Were those, do you distinguish between boat accidents and running around?
Again, the criteria was $500 worth of damage or physical injury. So
there's no distinction between.
I can't tell you
that. Mr. Koff, what would your perception of those accidents be in terms of... were they a natural object related, getting back to Possum Kingdom, or with another boat?
To respond to Rex Martin's question, it was really surprising to me because I figured that we would have more accidents on Hog Bend, and they weren't. Most of those are run aground. It's less than that. It may cost them $500 or $600 to get your boat off. That sand bar is not the end.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on here. This is the recommended net for Glenbury. Again, it is scenario A without the influence of July 3rd. We see only two or three areas that are red and right here and there, and otherwise we see kind of a lot of green spots and a few yellow. Okay, let's go ahead. Now, net B, as we include the influence of it, we do see some more cropping up of red here, but we're not using that map as our recommended map. Go ahead, please. Now, let's do the increases by 20%. We start here with kind of the 20% just beyond baseline. Go ahead. And then we have 40%, not much of a change. Go ahead. 60%, a little bit of a change here. Go ahead. Here are one of the zones cropped up as red that didn't before in the 80% scenario. And finally, the 100%, and you see quite a bit of change in terms of this becoming quite congested with boats, you know, based on this narrowness, obviously, and other factors. And so, will it turn out that way? Who knows? Given what we've seen in terms of increases in use there, it's most likely it will, and we would want to take that into consideration with any kind of future plans for development in areas that are certainly experiencing some congestion. Okay? So I've kind of run the gamut again of the percentages to give you some feel for what this look might be like in the next 3 to 5 years based on this information. Go ahead. So I'm kind of bringing this to a conclusion here. Are there crossroads? Apparently I think they are. I think there's some thresholds with crowding that's going on. These projections were very useful. I'm glad management recommended that we do those to see what lake might look like in future years. And so that leads us to some recommendations that I'd like to share with you at this point. Go ahead. Okay. We're recommending here, the study recommends, a resolution necessary to address existing conflict of boat traffic and economic development and environmental concerns. Okay. The next is to establish a narrow lake and special use zones in restricted areas as appropriate. We already have a program of lighted buoys that we would suggest continuing to install and a number of lighted centerline buoy markers. Okay. For Granbury again, the obstacle identification, selective reduction for public safety is important and should continue. Develop standards for docks and retaining walls in conjunction with county and city. And I might want to mention, in terms of cooperating partners, the county and city were very active in our workshops, and we had very good participation from outside people, and they provided their two cents at the table at the meetings, and I think a good dialogue was established and a good relationship will continue there. That's my observation. And then again, city and county explore shoreline buffers and seek improvement opportunities for BRA public use areas. Okay, the Possum Kingdom. The recommendation is to freeze existing commercial on-water facilities and wet storage marinas at present levels to include those previously contracted and opt for dry stack storage at suitable locations. And we deliberated over that quite a bit and felt that was the best course of action. No additional private underwater facilities unless grandfathered. Install China buoy markers, as we mentioned, for Granbury. And the last four, enhance additional boat ramps based on lake impacts. Continue to enhance ramp, courtesy docks, and parking conditions. Continue to enforce FERC regulations regarding setback guidance and creation of shoreline buffers. Go ahead.
Okay, I've got a question. When you talk about continue to enhance courtesy docks in relationship to the dry stack storage, you're going to have to provide courtesy docks for dry stack storage facilities, correct?
Of course.
What's the recommended number or ratio between actual storage, dry stack storage versus courtesy docks? I mean, is it 10 to 1?
I'm not sure on that. I mean, one statistic that I've used, I just took a student years ago, probably 10 years ago, and put them out at a marina. And I said, just count, you know, how many boats are out in the water, how many boats that stay. And this has been consistent. About 80% of boats and slips remain there, and only 20% actually go out. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you know, and we had a big workshop on this in right here in Dallas about 10 years ago with the core people. I had about 100 people here. And we did a workshop on it. And one of the managers says, well, we're warehousing boats on coves of marinas. Okay? And so he said, we're just going to find it and store them and take them on for the forklift, put them in the water. Because what people want is the option to get in the water more than anything. They want that freedom to say, I can call up and have that boat put on the water and go out there. Now, your question, however, have I done a study to see what kind of ratio exists for the guy that sells? I have not. I would be very curious to know. My guess is that it would be similar to the marina in that 80% remain stored and 20% go out on the water from that group. Does that answer your question?
Sort of, but I mean, I think we're in a position that if the recommendation is that we don't provide any more on-water marinas, then this board's going to need to have the information necessary to understand that if someone's asking for a 300-slip marina, and we say, no, you can have 300 dry stack storage at 20%, that's going to be, what, 60 slip that they're going to have available for use by those 300 dry stack units, correct?
Yes.
No. Go ahead, Mike.
The simple answer is we need to look at it on an individual basis, and I don't have the right answer for you today. What I have seen, as I have visited various locations in the southeast part of the country, somewhere between 10 and 25 courtesy slips to operate a large dry stack storage facility. But again, it's going to be on an individual basis. And we'll have to consider that number in any future proposals that a developer would offer us regarding dry stack storage.
What's the largest boat you can get in a dry stack storage?
There are dry stack systems that handle very, very large boats in excess of 26 feet.
I mean,
this lake has got boats on it that easily exceed 35 feet.
Correct.
So
I'm telling you that the technology to build dry stack storage is expanding the country right now, and if you give the manufacturer the challenge, then we speak of that response.
Yeah, you take some big questions.
That was actually a recommendation for Table Rock Lake, if you're familiar with Branson, Missouri. When we concluded this major workshop that I held to address that the Corps of Engineers felt they shouldn't be warehousing boats on some of the final last coves of a lake, and therefore they opted for dry stack storage. And my contention is the ratio is the same in terms of 80-20. So if you put a 300 stall unit in, 20% of those boats would be on the water. So the approval would be for a 300 unit stall for a number of boats of varying sizes, and the technology has improved, like Mr. Yelta said, to accommodate that.
So, could not ask that we try to get information on dry stack and some of that for the 8th?
Sure.
I would think you could make phone calls around the country to various places and find out if that ratio is similar to the one I have found from marinas. That answers your question, at least partially. Okay, let's conclude then, please. Okay, these recommendations and maps are supported by sound science, the science that I put together for this study. Yet they only serve as a guide, again, a snapshot, as Mr. Otis has said before, with other information. Decision to support the stewardship of the lake is necessary to protect building opportunities now in the future. When I opened this talk, I mentioned that it's a tug of war in decision space between politics, science, and management, and that still is true. And, you know, sometimes when you fly an airplane, you think about things to say, it focuses your attention. And I thought about taking my daughter, like, to a movie theater and saying it holds 150 people, we're in line to see Narnia, one of these movies, and we're 151st. Well, even though we waited long, you know, we're denied entrance. And then in some cases, I think these lakes are at that point right now where the accommodations for development are filling up, and it may seem unfair to be 151st, but that's just the way it goes, and you have to accept that and move on. The other thing that we struggled with in my little town of Windsor is the precautionary principle, okay? And what that says is that you should, you know, err on caution, especially for decisions that are irreversible. Once you make it, it's one way. You know, going around Lake with the managers and seeing the elevators along the cliffs, you know, those are one-way decisions that are irreversible, and, you know, we live with those. Any decision body leaves a legacy. You know, we kind of stand on the shoulders of great men and women of this country who've left a legacy, great men and women of Texas who've left a legacy, and what you do is part of a legacy that you will leave. So I think this study, and even the startup effort that I didn't really know about it, addresses, you know, what kind of place you want these lakes to be in the future, and what kind of, what will they look like? So it is my contention, from the part that involves science and management, that those two aspects should factor heavily in your decision, although I understand that other factors will, and I'm sure we'll make the right kind of decisions. That concludes my briefing.
A question?
Go ahead.
In regards to Possum Kingdom, 2005 was 25% lower than the years prior, is that correct?
Yes, based on the other two sources of data.
Okay. In previous studies where you've had a year that's, you know, lower, what have you done to bring those back up to a more normal level?
Okay, it doesn't occur too often. I did a study along the Louisiana coast at 88 boat ramps. And the first question I have to ask when you study, is it a typical year? Okay? And so I always use trend data to either confirm what is typical or disconfirm. In that study, I also had to make an adjustment based on the fact that it was not a typical year. Okay? So I haven't done this very often, probably, you know, 20% of the time in my studies, but I do it because my job is to portray the lake in some kind of real fashion. Just like when I shared with you that data, and we said that passes the kind of gut test that this is what it looks like. When we first looked at the maps of the lake, we saw that we knew there was more going on up there, but they all looked green, okay, as far as for development. And we knew that that probably didn't represent what was happening, in addition to the information on fishing, that it has been flat, only 1.8% people indicated on fishing. So if you can read the report, I make a compelling case in my estimation for including that, and it probably is still conservative in terms of the influence that it has.
Have you ever used a holiday weekend in this 20% of the other things that you've done to normalize the year?
That's a good question. I did that actually in the Louisiana data that I did some 15 years ago. Okay. Other reports, I haven't included that because the evidence wasn't there. Okay. But my point is, this is not the first time I've done that. Okay. And I always look at the data and ask the question, was that year typical? Or do I have reason to think that there's an anomaly here that would require some adjustment to best be representative of what's really happening out there? And so this is not a smoke and mirrors. This is not a card trick or anything. It's simply trying to portray the data in the most direct and honest way. Okay.
The reason I question is including the July 4th weekend is not only just because of the numbers, but because the use is very different that weekend in specific areas than the general summer. Was there any other way you could have normalized 2005 rather than including the holiday weekend?
Well, you could. I think it would be mathematically difficult. But, I mean, you could say, okay, if here's where the distribution is during non-holiday times, if we add that, does that present a different situation? That is, are people going to different places? And if they're going to different places, then it would make for an argument not to include it. My understanding of the data is they're going to the same places, just in higher numbers. Okay? But that's a very good point that could be made as far as, you know, where are they going on holiday versus non-holiday. I think it's good information as far as where people are going, that if we don't include it, it's just not part of what we know about that place. Okay? And it's a reality. I mean, those are really there at those times during that period.
Those people can come in on not holiday weekend, but the same place they were.
Do you have any other questions or thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. I think that's another point.
Can we get a copy of the progression maps for both Granbury and Possum Kingdom?
We brought them with us. In fact, last time we distributed them, Ken High has a full stack of those maps to include the progression and the recommended maps with him.
Okay. Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions?
One last thing I'd like to say is I just really enjoy working with the staff. It's a really dedicated staff of both folks. You have many staffs all over the country, and I highly commend them for the hard work they've done and the sincerity that they've put into this effort. And I think you're very fortunate to have that caliber of people working for you.
Excuse me. I had one question when you said Sherlock Butler's. Do you mean building assets? Like if you're going to develop a...
The question came up, gentlemen, of shoreline buffers.
Just offset so many feet from the shoreline of your building.
Can't you run that with that?
The distance of shoreline buffers?
Is that what you mean when you say shoreline buffers?
I think it's mostly protection of what's out there right now to protect the shoreline of what we've got.
Okay. What?
The distance perspective, I don't know where to put a distance on that shoreline buffer, haven't we?
No. We have been looking at the FERC project area in many instances as that buffer. But generally speaking, if you take the core model, the core engineering model, they draw 300 to 500 foot line around that lake. Their present process is we've never had a buffer outside of the FERC project buffer, okay, which doesn't necessarily represent what is best for the lake. For instance, if you're only 25 foot setback, if you build a polluting machine 26 feet away, that's having a significant impact on the lake. There's no natural buffer for that pollution.
We've had a lot of excitement with the shoreline buffers that come on Henry.
Well, I think you can see the consequences of a little bit at Granbury, where we have, in essence, no buffer around the lake, and that's what the recommendation was. Perhaps the city and county in Cliff County and the city of Granbury wants to consider those shoreline buffers. Right now, we don't have any way of creating any kind of buffer between the sources of pollution and the water.
I think it's a great idea.
Was there any, and it may be here, I just missed it, was there any indication or relation between the, I think I saw somewhere that 5.5 hours was the average number of hours that someone spent boating. Is there a correlation between weekend use, people that were there Saturday and Sunday versus daytime users, just one day users?
Those averages are pretty stable for weekday and weekend, 5.5 and 4.2. That's minor differences. People tend to spend that much time on the water, whether it's a weekday or weekend. But in the report, you can see the actual differences. In fact, you could compare them. You'll see those. The difference is minor between the time people spend on the water versus weekday versus weekend.
Well, and the number may not be out there, but if you look at Granbury versus PK, there are probably more homes with individual boat docks and people that, because it's located close to a city, that actually have access to their boats
right.
7 days a week. Right. Versus PK, where people come out and spend weekends. So I guess I'm trying to...
Yeah, well, if you notice, the average was higher for PK. So they spent more time, another hour more than the people at Granbury, and that may be attributed to that fact that you mentioned.
Okay.
And that follows. If you look at the sheer numbers of boat docks at Granbury versus Possum Kingdom, We're up to almost 6,000, I think, at Granbury, whereas we're sitting at around 4,000, a little bit less than that at Possum Kingdom. So what that says is that there's much more backyard use of the lake at Granbury than there is at Possum Kingdom.
We got one other thing, staff. Not wanting to take the opportunity to use your time, there's going to be some thorny issues that happen at Granbury, and we just want to expose them to you as you go back and deliberate this and think about it and get ready for the workshop. So, Councilman, say one thing here.
One of the first recommendation on Granbury that we had, if you noticed, was a resolution necessary to address existing conflict of boat traffic, economic development, and environmental concerns. And specifically up in this area here, that's the 377 bridge area going across.
Mike and I and Jerry Turner were up about a month ago with the city manager and a couple of developers up there. In that area, there's some property that's west of Home Depot, for those of you that are familiar with Granbury. It was just a little bit north of Catalina Bay. The last set of development that we allowed to put canals in here back in 02. And we, as you know, we've got a moratorium on any more cut-throughs at Granbury. Since that time, because of the issue of the E. coli and the water quality things, and now you also know that we're working on a $1.4 million watershed protection plan that we've just started up at Granbury to look at what is causing the problems that we've got as far as water quality, the concerns we've got of water quality on the lake. At the meeting a month ago, the city manager and the developers are looking at about two different developments up in that area, probably, where they want to put cut-throughs in and, of course, create more lakeside property, which opens up a whole nest of things to us. Now, they say, you know, we're going to do it right, we'll aerate it, we'll bulkhead it right, et cetera, et cetera, for that collection system, so it's not going to be an environmental problem to you. Well, I've got a real concern as we're working the watershed protection plan and trying to determine what our problems are up there right now. And when you looked at the push from them, the statement that was made to me was, Kent, you're not telling me that the BRA is not going to allow this type of development to take place in the very near future. And I said, I'm not telling you yes or no. All I'm telling you is that with the boating capacity study that we now see, and if you notice the classification compartments, that red would tell us no more new development in that area on water-type facilities. Now, canal cut-throughs in there, in our view, could create additional problems for us until we get this thing figured out as to what we're going to do with the water quality issues up at Granbury and get it fixed.
Put your finger back on that area. Really, that eastern shore there, isn't it very shallow with a lot of stumps?
There are a few stumps, not many stumps, only a couple of trees. It's the water depth in there is about, but it is the shallower side. It just carries out, but it's not super shallow enough.
I took the position that we certainly don't want to stifle economic development. We're concerned about it, certainly for the city and that. But from the authority perspective and the lake and water quality perspective, we've got to be concerned and we've got to look at this real smart before we just allow additional cut-throughs on it to go in there. So we'll be talking more certainly the future workshop and that, but that's going to come pretty fast from those developers in the city to make some decisions as far as allowing canal cut-throughs.
Just from my edification, just to the east of where you're pointing, along 377 there, there's a big commercial development going in there just west of Home Depot. So you're talking about the addition would be going south
commercial. Down in this area, just to the south of where the commercial stuff is going in, they want to do a residential development.
That's the floodplain area, right?
Probably be in the neighborhood of about
with the developer, we counted anywhere from 50 to 75 additional lots that they'd like to have with about two.
Is that the one that has a floodplain problem?
Pardon me?
Is that the one that has a floodplain problem?
Well, this is too. I mean, that's been a concern up here that we've got on Floyd's easement. We had to move that, and I think they pressed forward with the development kind of above from that. I just raised the issue because this early capacity study just would tell us right off the bat not to put anything else in there. There are more boats on the water in that area, but the political heat's going to be there to make some decisions. I'd like to do it.
Any other questions, comments, concerns?
Move on.
Okay.
We're ahead of that.
At this time, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
We have another issue.
Two seconds. Motion made by Rebecca Martin. Second by Jim Kilgore.
Yes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Sure.
Jennifer. And it's not in the lot, yes, it's right across the front lot.
I have naps.